crazy adventure. We didn't know how it would turn out. And I think it was choosing the bigger life. It was like, okay, we're totally scared. This could be a disaster, but let's go for it and try something new. And we were both so glad we did, even though it was really difficult. Sarah had to bring her 7-month-old baby. So, I mean, she really had a, you know, harder than I did.
No, and I remember when you were ordering your heavy duty cold weather gear. It was like,
yes.
It, like going to the North Pole.
Yes, that was scary. And we did shoot in snow a lot that year. And then, I mean, you and I, Gretch, I'm doing this podcast, is choosing the bigger life.
Yes, because we were like, you know, it's something new, it's a challenge. And we recently went to a podcast conference together, Podcast Movement in Texas. And yeah, to embrace this new aspect of our identity, it was very exciting.
Yeah, that was super fun. And we got to meet Matt Lieber from Gimlet, which was exciting for me because I'm a big startup
fan.
Yeah,
we're both huge startup fans. So, yeah, that was a little starstruck moment. So let us know if you do try this at home and if choosing the bigger life is a helpful question for you to consider. And again, thanks to everybody who weighed in on the big dog issue. It's a weight off my mind to have that decided.
And Gretch, there will be a photo of the dog once you get
home. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And videos.
Yes. Yes. So, Elizabeth, here is a question to help you know yourself better. And the question is, what's your tell?
And what is a tell? What do you mean by that?
So in gambling, a tell is when a person makes a change in behavior that reveals their inner state. So gamblers are looking for tells because they're trying to figure out whether other players are holding good hands or bad hands. So, you know, if you have some kind of little tick that reveals whether you're happy or you're sad or you're nervous. And so that's the tell.
And how do tells manifest in just like everyday life?
Well, so one of the things that I think is true is that it's hard to know ourselves because it's just hard to look directly at yourself. So it's really helpful to have these questions that you ask that sort of shine an indirect spotlight on your nature. And one of the things, at least for me, that's true is that often when I'm anxious, I'm not even really aware that I'm anxious. Like I'll have a low level feeling of uneasiness or I'm worried about something, but I kind of haven't even allowed myself to acknowledge it. And what I realize is that I have this super obvious tell, which is that when I get anxious, I start rereading my favorite works of children's literature. And the more anxious I am, the further back I go. And so, like, if I'm reading B is for Betsy or The Wizard of Oz, it's like, it's bad.
It's DEFCON.
Yeah. But I didn't realize this for the longest time, that I had this, like, really obvious tell. And now it helps me if I catch myself doing that. I'm like, wait a minute, like, catch a clue.
That's funny. Well, that seems like a pretty benign tell, I have to say.
No, and like now that I know that I have this tell, I can use it. So like when I was writing Better Than Before, I was doing this massive edit. I mean, it was massive. Just to say that at the beginning, the book was 140,000 words, and by the end, it was 80,000 words, and no ideas were cut. That was just massive reorganization and slenderizing. And I knew that, and I was like, you know what? To be able to deal with this, I am going to allow myself to do something that I've held off doing for years, which is to reread the entire Harry Potter series from the beginning. And that's what I did to calm myself during that time. So self-medicating through Harry Potter. How about you? Do you have a tell?
Well, I have a very physical tell, which is more like the gambling analogy.
Right.
I've mentioned this many times that when I'm nervous, my voice shakes. And it's just the worst. And so you just know automatically how I know that I'm anxious and nervous. And sometimes it'll pop up when I'm not even expecting it. And that's how I know I'm nervous. Like,
oh, right. So it is a tell that allows you to know yourself better because you're like, I didn't realize I was nervous, but now that I know.
Yes.
Yeah.
For instance, it happened when I was doing voir dire, like for a jury, you know, I had to answer questions. I was like hyperventilating and my voice was shaking. It was so embarrassing. And I think it was because I was anxious about getting on this jury because I had all this work I had to do and, you know, I was concerned about the deadlines. I also was thinking that, you know, for me, this is more like your children's literature, but on the other side of the cultural spectrum, which is that the more stressed I am, the worse reality TV I watch. You know, so there's like a bar, and I won't name any shows, so I don't want to do that, but there's like good stuff, and then there's the bad stuff.
Right.
And I'll dive deep into the bad stuff when I'm really stressed. Stuff I wouldn't even admit to you that I watch.
Now, hey, don't I remember that you work with somebody who had a tell?
Sean Ryan, my old boss at the Shield, who I adore, his thing was when he came into the room with two Cokes and a bag of M&Ms, then you knew, okay, he's serious. We're going to get a lot of work done in the next 2 hours. And when those two Cokes and the M&Ms came out, it was like down to business.
Now, do you think he knew it? I mean, you knew it was his tell. Did he know it was his tell?
I don't know. I think he might have, but I think he did, because I think eventually everyone would start pointing it out, like, He's got the two Cokes and the M&Ms, like, get ready. But it's just funny how those things kind of emerge.
So listeners, let us know, like, do you have a tell? Like, do you have a way, like some behavior that you do, something that you do that shows your inner state of mind, even if you don't really... aren't really even aware of your inner state of mind? It'd be fascinating to hear what other people's tells are.
Gretchen, this week we have a listener question from Allison in Liverpool in the UK, which is exciting. She says, I can't answer the question, how are you, in a light, positive manner. Whenever I'm asked, I always have to throw in a complaint. Oh, I'm really tired. Well, I've got so much work to do. And if I'm at work, I'd rather be at home. I'm a high school teacher, and while the job is exhausting at times and can be stressful, I genuinely love what I do and where I work, but I seem incapable of just saying, I'm fine, thanks. I don't know how or when this started, and as soon as the words leave my mouth, I'm kicking myself on the inside, but it's just a natural reflex. I've reached the point now where a lot of the time I just say hi to the person who's greeted me and ignore the question. So people will think I'm either a complainer or rude. Ladies, can you help?
Well, you know, Well, Allison's question brings up a tension that comes up a lot within the area of happiness, which is, on the one hand, we want to be very authentic and true to ourselves and our actual experience. And then on the other hand, we really want to be positive and amplify good feelings. And so she's sort of in this thing like, well, I want to be authentic, but I also don't want to be negative, and yet I have these negative feelings. And so what's helpful for me to think is when I feel that tension myself is to think, well, can I look for something within the experience where I can be authentically positive? Sure, there are things where I would be authentically negative, but there's probably authentically positive things too. And basically it sounds like Allison's a person who really does really love her job and her workplace. Maybe the thing is to look for the things, you know, and to have them uppermost in your mind, so that you're thinking about them when the question arises.
Yeah, and if she's worried that people think she, you know, seems like a complainer or too negative, maybe even if something negative slips out, like, oh, I have so much work to do, she could, because she says she regrets it as soon as it's out of her mouth, maybe she could have followed up with, but I love, you know, the assignment that my ninth graders are working on.
Right,
like,
right.
So, you know, just so that she's not leaving people with the negative.
It is true. Research shows that we do have, there's something called the negativity bias, which is that our interest is more captured and we remember better things that are negative. So if you're thinking about just experience in general, the negative things carry more weight. And so you do really have to kind of throw your energy into overcoming that, to really be thinking about the positive sides, because the negativity will assert itself more authoritatively.
And then, Gretch, I know you think it's good to sort of, you were saying, like, maybe in the morning, think about what's something positive.
Right. No, yeah, absolutely. Like, if she says she genuinely loves what she does and where she works, so maybe really to counteract the negativity bias, really think about the things she's grateful for, the things she loves, because then that will drive out those feelings of annoyance and irritation and resentment. Because the fact of the matter is, I mean, I think she's sort of pointing this out here, is that people do tend to turn away from people who are persistently negative. I mean, whether or not they should, they do. You know, we catch energy from each other. It's called emotional contagion. We catch emotions from each other. And so, you know, if you're too much of a downer, it can be something that can affect your relationships with other people. So I think it's really something that's worth thinking about, how to do it in an authentic way, but also to think about how to be authentically positive.
Yeah. All right. So Allison, hope that helps, and let us know. All right, Gretchen, this week you are up with a happiness demerit.
Yes, this is a demerit that I give myself now, and I've given it to myself for the last several years, and I really don't know what to do about it. And this is the question of summer. So when you're a kid, your summer is very different from your fall and your winter and your spring. And I really like that. And for a lot of grown-ups, that's still true. Like, there's something about their summer that makes it very different from the rest of the year. And I was reading, I love Robertson Davies, and he wrote, "Every man makes his own summer. The season has no character of its own unless one is a farmer with a professional concern for the weather." And he says, "Adventures are what make a summer." And I thought every year I think I want to do something to make summer special so that I think you can almost get like double life because, you know, right. For some people have like crazy different, like they actually live in a different place. They have different friends, different activities. I can't do that because I got my, you know, I've got my work to do. And I feel like maybe I don't really want to have a different summer because I'm a writer. I could have a very different schedule right. if I wanted it. And so I keep saying that I want this and then not doing anything to bring about change. So maybe I don't really want it a different kind of summer, but then I keep thinking that I do. I don't know. You know me. What do you think? Do you think I want to? What's the deal?
I think you probably don't really want a different summer because you really like routine, but that you want a different summer because you know that it would expand your life. So you're warring inside over these two desires, much like the dog situation.
No, I could choose the bigger life. Choosing the bigger life would probably be to have some kind of different summer.
It would. I mean, I'm wondering, you know, summer is 3 months. Let's say June, July, August. I'm wondering if you just picked 1 month to be really different, if that would give you, you wouldn't feel like you were losing so much of your routine time, but that your July was completely different. Or August, you know, and so then maybe if it was less of a commitment, you'd be more likely to do it.
That is a great idea. Okay, well, now I have to wait till next summer to try it. Okay, yeah. I'm thinking that next August, it's going to be radically different.
Everything Let's is schedule be, it yeah. next year yeah. that you're going to
Me and the dog
have.
Are going to go off yeah. yeah. and do something crazy. Okay. So that's my demerit. Okay, gold star. What's your gold star?
My gold star goes to a complete stranger. Gretch, I work on the Disney lot in LA, in Burbank.
It sounds so glamorous.
It sounds more glamorous than it is, but, it is quite wonderful, I must say. And because we have writer's offices here, but then in different parts of the lot, shows also shoot here. So, all sorts of people are around all the time because productions are going on. So the other day I was coming out of the parking garage and as I was coming out of an elevator, this guy was running down the stairs and he looked to me, he's about 20 years old and he didn't even have his shoelaces tied. He was clearly in a huge hurry and he looked to me like an extra who was late.
How did you know that?
Just because I've been around all this stuff for so long that I just sort of can identify, you know, oh, that person's in construction, that person's an actor, that person's an extra, that person's a director, et cetera. So anyway, he was coming down the stairs and you could just tell he needed to get where he was going. And he went out the door and then he just screeched to a stop and he held the door open for me. And then I went through and of course said thank you. And then he just took off sprinting across the lot. And I could tell like he wanted to keep going because he was in a hurry, but he was so polite that he could not hold the door for me.
It was so ingrained.
It was so ingrained. And I just thought, well, that's so nice because it was just like, hey, civility still matters. And I don't know if I would have done the same. So it was also a little wake up call to me.
Well, I can tell you, I would not do. I am the worst about that. When I'm in a hurry, I just like basically am kicking people out of my way.
You just take no prisoners.
Yeah, like knocking little children off their tricycles. I mean, I really like. I get so focused, and that takes a lot of discipline. Too.
Yeah. So I thought he was so sweet, and so gold star to the stranger who held the door for me on the Disney lot.
And if you hear this guy, like by some miracle, tell us, because that would be so great.
Yeah,
if he knew
great.
That he had earned that gold star.
It would.
So that's it for this episode of Happier. Remember, try this at home. Choose the bigger life. Let us know if you've ever tried it and if it worked for you. And if you have any advice about having a dog, now that I know that I'm going to get a dog, I would love to hear that too.
Oh, wow. Whole new realm.
Whole new realm.
Thanks to all our listeners for weighing in about the dog. And if you want to read the many thoughtful comments, check out happierpodcastdogs.tumblr.com. And remember, Tumblr is T-U-M-B-L-R. And thanks to our producer, Henry Malofsky. Also, thanks to Laura Mayer and Andy Bowers from Panoply.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend. That really helps us. And subscribe to us in iTunes. And rate and review. Instructions on my site if you need them.
Until next week, I'm Elizabeth Kraft.
And I'm Gretchen Rubin. Thanks for joining us. Onward and upward.
This podcast is part of the Panoply Network. Check out our entire roster of podcasts at itunes.com/panoply.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.